Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Today we have four rounds of the magazine. Round number one. A French pilot got tied to a post while fighter pilots fired around him just for a little prank and goofing hazing ritual, man. Sometimes the things that people get hazed for, like I look back at my time in the Marine Corps, I don't give a fuck what school I go to. You're not tying me to a post and firing fucking rockets from fighter jets and me just being like, okay, boys, this is part of it.
No. Being part of the gang, I guess.
I'm fighting the gunny, dude. Like you know that old adage, well, if you want to go to the tree line, let's go. Mm-hmm. Like I saw that one time happen. There's a Lance Corporal that I worked with in Okinawa. And one of our sergeants was just constantly a dick, man. And it took him like 3 or 4 months. But by the time this started happening, the dude was just like, you know what? Fuck it. Yes, I will go to the tree line. Cause he used to always ask him like, you want to go to the tree line? You want to figure this out? You look at him like you want to fight. We can go fight. Eventually you say that shit so many times. When somebody calls you out and be like, yep, let's do it. You got no choice.
You
got to go.
Yeah, you have to. Especially,
you get your ass beat. You can't say shit. Mm-hmm. There's no charge sheet for assaulting an NCO when you say, do you want to go to the tree line? And the response was, I, Sergeant, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would like to go do that. I would like to go. That should be a thing, man. We were talking about that on Barstool Confessions, the show that I do with Feidelberg about the Bible. I was saying we need to bring back duels, man. Duels need to come back in a big way.
Well, yes, but could we do them such that aren't fatal?
About we do duels and you use riot control sandbag shotguns?
Okay.
Have you ever been shot with one of those?
No, but I can't imagine it tickles.
Oh, God. That shit fucking smarts, man. Like in the words of old Charlie Brown, I got shot in the thigh with one in less lethal training. I, honest to God, honestly, that hurt worse than when I got shot with an AK-47. Honestly,
well, the AK just kind of goes right through you. Whereas
it goes through you. It's like getting hit with a golf ball. This one is just like you. It hurts so bad. I've been shot with two other weapons that hurt worse than an AK. One is an M4 with soap rounds in it, like the less lethal rounds, because it doesn't go through. It stops on your skin, which I think hurts more. Like mm-hmm. Unless it just like going through something, it's done. Like it's over with. You just have the recovery time. The soap rounds, I got soap rounds shot up all through the left side of my body when I was doing domestic violence training in Okinawa. And we had to go in and I had just got this ugly ass koi fish tattoo. So it was like super fresh. I got lit the fuck up by our SWAT team. And my arm, you know, the, slalom that they do at the Olympics skiing.
Yes.
Where it's like the hills one where you're like going down. What is that called?
Moguls.
Yeah. It's like my arm looked like a mogul hill of like salt, blood, and runny tattoo ink. It was like that for days, man. That's like I was walking around and be like, go catch a dog. I'm like, dude, I can't catch the dog, man. I can't fucking put it on. They're like it's a new, and I was like I was the main guy. Like if they're a super aggressive dog, I could handle them the best, like as far as being a decoy. So they're like, we need you to go out there and this dog has got to go for certification. I'm like, dude, I can barely move my fucking arm, man.
You need to leave me alone today. Yeah.
It was brutal. All right, round number two. We got some good subjects today. Round number two, there's a bartender. I believe it was outside of Fort Litterwood, Missouri, which is hell on earth. He destroyed a couple military members' ID card and put on a full ass Karen display. Went full Karen. I mean, this is the kind of story. I don't talk about page views here. The most click story I've ever had at Barstool was this article, and for good reason. This dude needs to fight one of these soldiers at Rough and Rowdy. absolutely has to. Like, imagine, dude, this is something we need to pursue.
Yes.
These, one of these two dudes, because the one guy that he did it to, just based on the video and like the surroundings, I would say he's probably 6'1", 6'2", probably 180-ish. And this, the bartender was probably about 6 foot, 6'1", probably 220.
Yeah,
so
he
would have
big.
The size advantage. But if we could sell that military Karen fights military members, that would be a good ass rough and rowdy.
It definitely would be. Although I feel like the bartender, we'll get into it. I think he feels a little remorseful. Maybe.
I don't care. No, there's once you go viral, there is no remorse.
Okay.
You got to come out before it goes viral.
Them's the rules. Them's the rules.
Yeah. If you say, I'm sorry, it doesn't matter. Once you've reached a million views on social media, your apology is worthless.
That's true. Cause you could just be doing it to get everybody off your back.
You 1,000% are. You are doing it just because everybody's coming at your neck. I mean, this dude lost his band. He lost his job. His Yelp reviews on the restaurant went from like 5 stars of like all the military members be like, we love this place, to fuck this place. This place is like communist China. This place is a piece of, why is this allowed to even happen in America? Some of the comments on Yelp were outrageous. Round number 3. Courage is not the absence of fear, but moving forward to get the honey in spite of fear. We have a new series. We're going to be highlighting some folks who do courageous jobs that aren't in the military. And first up is a beekeeper that I found while I was 3chi goofing one night on Instagram. Because realistically, being a beekeeper, and you have dangerous jobs, right? Like, I looked up the list of dangerous jobs, like being a logger is incredibly dangerous. Mm. Being somebody who works on trains is incredibly dangerous because you're just constantly around the track. Being somebody who's a roofer, you could fall off at any time. There's a litany of jobs. You did not expect the woman that you're going to see if you're watching on YouTube to be doing a super dangerous job. Blonde hair, blue eyes, beautiful lady, chilling. She makes videos like she just listens to French pop music all day. And she has the biggest set of balls I've ever seen. Like, she'll just go to this, she'll go to a trailer park and be like, yeah, I'm going to take this circular saw, pop off this panel and pull out 6,000 bees and put them in the back of my truck and drive them home.
Sure. Why not?
Not me, buddy. There's one bee that got into my pool this weekend. I went and got the skimmer to get that thing out. I'm not fucking, when she was
reaching her hand.
Oh,
you couldn't just use your hand? You couldn't just use your hand? He was already in the pool. You couldn't just swipe them out?
Well, you never know what's happening. What if it's acting like fucking the Undertaker and it pops up and it's acting like it's dead, and the next thing I know I'm getting Cactus Jack or Mankind's fucking sock down my throat?
Yeah, well, I don't think bees can swim, so I think you're probably okay in the clear.
Wrestling references for our new producer Nick, by the way.
I'm getting excited.
All right, so that's round number 3, and finally round number 4, thanks to my guy Jim Laporta from the Associated Press. He put out this tweet series that I saw that was about a roundtable discussion that happened, I believe, based on the videos, I would say early 90s. It surfaced this week involving reporters and active duty folks talking about war reporting. It really is fascinating. And one reason why I find it fascinating, because usually when you have military members speak on the record, typically that only happens in front of Congress. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't give a whole lot of interviews. And if they do, it's with PAO or somebody like that, the public affairs officers sitting beside them and giving them like kind of what to say, the talking points. This was off the cuff answers from people as low ranking as majors, which most people listening, you're like, oh, a major is not that low ranking. In the grand scheme of like the DOD, a major is a nobody.
Oh, there's so many major. There's so many majors out there that they're a dime a dozen.
Right. Really. And I mean, your job isn't very important as a major, but when you're talking about being a policy driver, that's not what a major is.
Right. You're not a mouthpiece for the branch.
No, I would say you're like, for a Wendy's example, you would be like the store manager.
Yes.
Whenever you're working at Wendy's, your company commander is going to be your shift manager. And then you're going to have some line managers that are working the fries. That's going to be your lowly staff NCOs. Like,
mm-hmm. That's a good comparison. I like it.
It is. I'm sure everybody that's on active duty and an officer and has worked fucking 16 years to become a major is really going to appreciate that. I'm really going to ingratiate myself, because, you know, Cons, the officers that listen to this show love me.
Yes. They adore you.
Mm-hmm.
I often get messages. Hey, I just want to tell you something.
Appreciate what I had a staff at CEO like Chaps. Really
appreciate what you guys do, but I need you to do me a favor. I need you to let Chaps know he's really doing a great job, and I respect everything and agree with everything.
Doesn't belittle officers in the slightest.
No, he's the best.
Does not do that. He is the best, and he's also the best because he has the low, low cost of 3Chi that he can hook us up with. Listen, 3Chi, if you haven't tried it, you can't try it if you're on active duty. But if you're not on active duty, you need to run to this link to get it. They've introduced new products like Rice Krispie Treats.
Whoa.
By the way, Rice Krispie Treats, brownies, and cookies coming in. Not fair, though. They only want you to eat a quarter of the cookie.
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
Even Jesus didn't have that type of self-control. No. One quarter of a cookie? Buddy, I'm not waking up until 10.
Yeah,
that full ass cookie. They I was watching this show, or it was the FCS football, like, because they had the lower division, they had like their championships, and the semifinals was this weekend. And one of the coaches, he's a head football coach of South Dakota State, and he has an agreement with his wife. He signs the contract with South Dakota State. He's been their coach for like 12 years. He's been their head football coach for like 12 years. He said after his second contract extension, he made his wife sign a contract that for every win that he gets in a season, she has to make him a plate of Rice Krispie Treats. Like,
that's a great deal.
Rice Krispie Treats.
It's a great deal.
So this year they're on win number 8. And he was like, how do you think things are going to go home? And he was like, listen, like, I know that our success is great. I just feel bad for my wife. That's 8 dozen Rice Krispie treats that she owes me.
So interesting you say that. So one of my very dear friends, I actually officiated his wedding, but one of my dear friends since high school is the offensive coordinator for Sam Houston State, who won an amazingly exciting game against.
So they're in the finals then?
Yes, they're in the finals. His wife.
Oh, they upset James Madison.
Yes. Oh, wow. Dude, it was an unbelievable game. I was glued to the TV. I was going nuts on Saturday. It was awesome.
Do that every year. This is when they should be playing all the time. That should be their thing. Yeah. Don't play alongside everybody else.
Yeah, that's tough. That's I mean, obviously, but they showed the numbers. The numbers are way, way down. They actually do really good numbers when they're in the fall.
Well, I don't think anybody knew it was going on. They don't do enough.
Probably part of it. If they promoted it and made a permanent switch, you'd probably see an improvement. But so the wife of the OC, Ryan Carty, his wife, Katie, she makes these specialty cupcakes before every game, and she bases it on who they're playing and the theme of the week. I got to send you the Instagram pictures of these cupcakes. I know you're not a huge, huge sweets guy, but these cupcakes.
You're right. I'm not usually a huge sweet guy. Cupcake is the perfect amount of sweet.
Oh man. It's just perfect. The right amount.
And, you get the whole cake in your hand.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
She's so creative. I'm trying to push her to make a whole book of them. But yeah, shout out to my guy, Ryan, who big win against JMU. I live with a JMU alum.
Oh,
so it was a little
PFT
bit of a,
with you.
Yes, I'm PFT. All right. Shit. Cat's out of the bag. PFT and I are roommates.
That's cool.
Now everyone knows. So
it's weird. Cause he's married too, but whatever.
We make it work.
I understand rent's expensive in New York. It's hard to, it's hard to afford your own place.
Yeah.
Even with the
education. We split the chores. Chores evenly.
I mean, that's a really big sticking point for the Air Force Academy, where they can just clip that and be like, look, you go to West Point, you get out after a while, you're rooming with some dude with long hair and sunglasses. Nobody wants that. But go to 3chi.com. They have the best federally legal version of THC. It's more functional alternative to marijuana. It gives you an amazing buzz and a great body feeling with a cleaner head and less anxiety. It's available online at 3chi.com. That's the number 3chi.com. And at retailers around the country. You must be 21 to purchase. And remember, it's not CBD. It's psychoactive. It'll give you a buzz. So use it responsibly. Again, go to 3chi.com. The number 3chi.com for the Delta 8 gummies, the tinctures, and the oils that can be made to use homemade edibles. So even if you want to make your own cupcakes, you can dump a bucket of that shit in there and just be high off your fucking balls. Use the promo code ZBT2021 to receive 5% off your order. Let's get started with the show. We're going to get going with a little bit of hazing. First up, round number one. This story comes to us from France. And normally when it starts from France, everybody says they're pussies. Look, I want to say France gets a bad rap about being a pussies. Yes, they probably could have done and should have done more in World War II. But since then, I feel like France really isn't that much of a pussy. Like, if you look at some of the social unrest that happens in France, they're lighting off bombs. They're doing smoke grenades. They're doing flashbangs. They're doing all kinds of crazy shit. I got a letter. And, I mean, the balls and the ladies there to not shave their pits or their pussies ever. Courageous.
I feel like that is a sweeping generalization that the listeners in France you can do, might not appreciate. Look,
I understand, and I'm a pretty woke, libby kind of guy. You can say whatever you want about any country in Western Europe and nobody can say shit about it. Like, you could just absolutely roast them, say generalities. You can't do that anywhere else in the world. Western Europe, everything's fair game.
Why is everything fair game in Western Europe?
Predominantly white. Like, you can make fun of them for doing anything, really.
Okay. I'm going to let you take that one. I'm going to stay away from this one. That's all you.
That's fine. But it's true. Nobody's... Name one person that's ever gotten canceled for making fun of France.
I can't think of anyone.
You can't. You're not going to get canceled for making fun of France, for Sweden, for Norway. You're just not. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, probably not.
You go a little bit west. You start making fun of Saudi Arabia, even though Saudi Arabia is the biggest pieces of shit on earth. You're going to get some.
You're going to get some blowback. Yes.
Certain, yeah. Certainly. One of my buddies, dude. I went to high school with him. I actually just. You know, it's strange when you come across somebody that you haven't seen in forever. He actually went to the Naval Academy, and we ran into each other once at in Okinawa. He was serving in Okinawa. I was serving in Okinawa, and we just ran into each other at like the store on base. And I looked and it's one of those moments where you're both wearing uniforms and it doesn't matter. Like he was, I believe he was a lieutenant. So an O3 at the time in the Navy. I was maybe an E5, Sergeant E4, possibly. And we looked at each other and I was like, Gus? And he was like, Matt? I was like, what? Huh? What? Huh? What are you doing here?
What's that uniform?
Like, when you see somebody from back home and it's there, it's just such a bizarre feeling, and all rank and all that shit goes away. Well, I recently saw that he had been living in like Saudi Arabia teaching English. And I'm like, that is braver than anything that he did in the Navy by far.
I have to imagine he gets a pretty nice penny for doing that, working there overseas like that.
Oh yeah. I mean, you make some, I mean, he's a Naval cadet. It's not like he's fucking be taking nothing. Like,
right.
Like
still, exactly.
I know you don't like him, but it's still a pretty good school.
It's okay. I think, I'm not sure. Quickly though. Hey, Nick, real quickly, you hear Okinawa. What do you think of?
Right. Again.
Yeah.
Bingo. Thank you. All right. Anyway,
shout out longtime Sully, Mr. Miyagi.
Oh, and Danielson.
Danielson, man. That guy. It sucks whenever you're super famous for a role that you did when you're a child and nobody respects you as a man.
Yes, that's a good point. Well, he had a lot of big roles early on, and then he just kind of faded into nothing. I mean, between The Outsiders, which was amazing, and then the Karate Kid series, I think he peaked. He probably peaked with Karate Kid, and then My Cousin Vinny, he was on the downslope, as good as that was. And then
I don't count any of those other movies that you just said. He's only Danielson. It's like Roy from The Office being on that Mayor of Easttown or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
You're Roy, dude. Like, yeah. Stop it. The biggest loser from The Office? Easily Oscar. What are you doing in State Farm commercials?
My, how the mighty have fallen.
It's just so sad to see. So this story about France, we'll actually get into it. This one comes to us from the Associated Press. It says a French Air Force pilot has filed a criminal complaint alleging that a part of his hazing ritual, he was tied to a target on a firing range where fighter pilot planes flew overhead and fired off munitions. The complaint did not identify the people alleged to have carried out the hazing or say how many of them were involved. And the Associated Press was not able to independently establish the identities of those responsible for the incident. Colonel Stepp, a spokesman for the French Air Force, said that an internal inquiry had been ordered by an Air Force command and those responsible had been punished. The most severe punishment was a restriction to the barracks. First off, I'm going to stop right there and get your thoughts, Cons. If you strap somebody to a pole and have fighter pilots drop munitions around their bodies, should that get more than what you would get if you were, I don't know, unshaved at PT?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes. That was a situation where the punishment did not fit the crime.
And people that have listened to this show for a while know I'm not the best reader, although I will say my allowed reading skills have improved drastically over the 4 years that we've been doing this show. When I read that, that they only got barracks restrictions, I was legit taken aback. I was like, this can't be right.
Well, just I guess
barracks restriction.
Maybe we aren't giving France.
And what officers live in a barracks?
Well, maybe on a deployment or a training situation where they're all living in a barracks situation.
But if you're at your permanent place of duty,
you're definitely not in the barracks. But I don't know. Maybe France does things differently, and maybe I'm not giving them enough credit that they're
right.
Just looking this at this guy to like, show you.
They're not
the big
as big
deal?
As pussy as people say. Like
maybe
I mean, you fire off a Hellfire missile at somebody, and you get barracks restriction. Buddy, I fire a Hellfire missile at somebody, I'm probably going to get electrocuted.
Yeah, you'll probably go to Leavenworth for the better part of your life if you engage in this.
Or if you're in South Carolina, you might get to do the old firing squad, which they're bringing back. I understand South Carolina is wanting to bring back the death penalty by way of firing squad. Who the fuck signs up for that job? I feel like if you sign up to be a member of the firing squad, you should go to jail. Like, that's pre-crime.
Yeah, that's a great way to identify
criminals off the street. We have a job openings for people to do the firing squad. Anyone who applies gets arrested.
Yeah, because you clearly don't have a conscience. So,
and they're like, oh, it's a blank. You can't tell. You're trying to.
Yes, you're attempting to kill the person. That's not okay.
I think I would be more okay with it. I don't know, because as soon as that came out, there's also that story that came out about the fella who was executed, and then it came out 4 years later that he actually didn't do it, and they showed like the reports like of what happened. His court-appointed attorney was drunk, got censured for being drunk while in the trial during sentencing phase. The guy was adamant that he didn't do it, had an alibi. The court didn't hear the alibi. Like they ruled the alibi was inadmissible in court. And then 4 years after they executed him, they found DNA evidence and it wasn't him that did it. And like, to me, I saw so many threads about that. That in and of itself should be enough to get rid of the death penalty. Like if you do it one time and people are like, well, it does happen from time to time. No, dude. Like if that's your dad, or your brother or your sister or whoever that gets executed, you're not going to be like, well, that's what happens sometimes. You fucking die.
No, there's a significant percentage. It's significant enough. I mean, I never really gave a lot of thought to where I stand on the death penalty, if I should get rid of it or keep it. But there are a lot of people that are on death row that are ultimately innocent, and it's been proven as such. I would also argue, if you just let someone rot away in jail, that is a much worse sentence than just ending their life.
Mm-hmm.
You're putting them out of their misery, as they say. So why not just let them sit in a 4x6 cell for the rest of their life with
and as
20
you get older,
of
right? Some of these sentences that people get are insane.
Mm-hmm.
The way that we do it in America sometimes is legitimately crazy. Like, you rob a fucking convenience store of something over like $1,000 and you go to jail for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
5 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Our justice system is not perfect. I think it's great in a lot of ways. In other ways, it needs improvement. But yeah, sentencing, depending on where you commit your crime.
Or weed, possession of weed.
Yeah, especially
like in Texas, you go to jail for 90 days for weed.
And that's crazy. Now, I would be interested to see, as eventually it's going to become federally. It won't even just be state by state anymore. Eventually, it'll become federally legal. I wonder how many sentences get. What's the word I'm looking for? Immunity?
Adjudicated.
Or,
not adjudicated. Adjudicated means actual punishment.
Right.
They get pardoned.
Pardoned. Yeah, that wasn't the word I was looking
for.
No,
I know
what
you're looking for. Not fucking.
Starts
pardon.
With an I. Starts with an I. See, this is what happens.
Yeah, it does start with an I. Think.
We're looking for words.
Mm-hmm. Words are so tough. I mean, it's really unfair that people expect this on a military podcast to know words.
Right?
It's so fucked up.
That's crazy.
It's really unfair. So, anyways, the most severe punishment with barracks restriction. He did not say how many people we received the punishment, though, or for how many days. The pilot said in the complaint that, which was seen by the Associated Press, that the hazing occurred in March of 2019, soon after he arrived at a combat fighter unit at the airbase in the French Mediterranean island of Corsica. The pilot had the hood over his head and was forced to the back of a pickup truck by several colleagues who drove him to a firing range, according to the complaint. Photos, which included in the complaint, showed a man in military fatigues with his legs and hands bound, attached to the firing range target with heavy-duty nylon straps. Video footage, which is cited in the complaint, was provided to the Associated Press by the pilot's lawyer and showed him in combat jets making several low passes nearby. The complaint alleges that during some of these passes, the pilot tied to the target could hear the sound of the live munitions being fired from the aircraft. He did not dispute the authenticity of the images and said that they created the mistaken impression that the aircraft were directing fire at the target who was tied to the target. So, and the French Air Force is like, this is the craziest part of the entire thing. Not that you would do this to a fellow soldier, like your fellow like wingman or whatever the fuck you want to call it. Listen to this last paragraph. In the last paragraph, these crazy French motherfuckers, he said that they were training at the training exercise at a different location, and that the closest any munition came what didn't put him in any danger, but it only was 0.6 miles away.
So they're saying it wasn't danger close, so it was okay, essentially, is what they're saying.
That was my initial thought, because some of these, a Hellfire missile, for example, like that is fired from Apache helicopters and several other type of helicopters and the A-10s as well. That danger close is 100 meters. So you extrapolate that out, you have one click, like that you go. So that's a tenth of one click. If you're talking about actual fighter jets, the munitions that they're firing are much, much bigger than a Hellfire missile.
Mm-hmm.
They must have been just outside danger close.
Yeah.
What's danger close for a 155? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Jesus. It's.
Oh, this is wow, going to be good.
Bad. This is bad.
If you're wrong. Oh.
Oh, man.
After the whole fucking nine thing that happened last week. And
yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, you should know. If you ask me a dog question, I'm going to know off the top of my head.
You have that artillery officer. I know, but you have that weird memory, but where you remember all this stuff. Crap. Oh man, I don't want to say anything because God forbid I'm wrong.
No, not say anything is a coward's way out.
No, you're right. All right.
Have a take.
60 meters.
Ooh, I don't know what it is either, but I'm sure he's got this Googling right now. Overall, the idea of, I think hazing, the principle of hazing is drastically overblown in the military. I think some hazing is beautiful and needs to keep going. Like the hazing of when somebody gets promoted to sergeant or corporal or staff sergeant or something like that, and you're driving in the chevrons into their collarbone and you do it once and you hit them pretty hard and it happens, I'm fine with that. Like there needs, the military is a pain organization. Like there, to remove any type of pain from the organization, I think hurts the organization. You have to be able to take some pain to do well in this line of work. Mm-hmm. Like you just do. That's part of it. However, you have fucking idiots like these people that just go way too far. You want to hit his fucking wings into his shoulder blades once, maybe twice, I have no problem. You make somebody bleed all the way down their dress uniforms and you fuck them up where they're scarred forever, you've gone too far.
Yes.
If you're doing like blood stripe initiations that we do in the Marine Corps whenever you reach the rank of NCO and you're kneeing somebody in the thigh to give the illustration of what a blood stripe is, I'm fine with that. When people can't walk for days afterwards, you went too far. Mm-hmm. Like there needs to be a little bit of common sense practice, but that's the issue, is a lot of these fucking idiots, they don't have any of that.
No, not at all. All right. So a few things. Number one, the word I was looking for before was commuted. And that means they don't overturn. Yeah. When you're pardoned, it means that your sentence is overturned and said like, no, you didn't actually do it. Commuted means we're going to still say you're guilty, but significantly reduce the sentence. So that's what I think will happen.
More
with
importantly,
a lot of-
were you right about the danger close?
No. So that was my next point. I was very wrong. Guess what?
Can I guess? I haven't looked it up and you guys can see me. So 1-5-5 round, I would say danger close is, I'm going to say 500 meters.
Bingo. Correct. I was way off.
I'm not even an artillery officer.
I know. I just,
how I remember that?
How?
I did a call for fire class in sergeant's course.
Ah, very good. Very good. I don't know why I thought it was so much less.
I don't
know
how my brain works that way.
You remember all this stuff. It's unbelievable.
And I don't remember. My wife tells me something. I don't know that shit at all. I failed algebra 5 times in college. I can't do. I took Russian, Spanish, French. I was just trying to find a foreign language. Can't do it. Anything military member like related, I could write it down like verbatim. Yeah, it makes zero sense.
You really are impressive. And I just, these numbers, they just got lost in my head somewhere. And I'm a little embarrassed that I don't remember something as basic as danger close. Maybe it was, I don't know. I'm not even going to make an excuse. I should remember that. That's a pretty basic thing. Close. No, I wasn't even close. I wasn't even danger close.
I can't wait to
say.
Blog this. This
is gonna be fantastic. Man. But so what I was going to say was,
tag West Point football in it too.
I mean, they don't have anything to do with that. If anything, tag, the Fort Sill Artillery School.
No, I don't. I don't even mention Fort Sill because of their shiesty ass credit union.
Oh, right. True. I will say, when I was in Iraq, I got tied to a pole by my platoon on my birthday, and they poured ice water and shaving cream. And it was one of those things where
that's good, clean fun.
That's just, yeah, exactly. We're all just having fun, goofing and busting the chops of the LT. Now, had they, I don't know, take me to a pole and all taking one punch at me, or like gave me a sock party.
They essentially did what Kim Jong-un does to his dissenters.
Yes. Not
as
cool.
Like a prize for graduating school.
Yeah. Maybe they could just buzz them, fly really low, time to the pole, fly really, really low.
Just not do any of that stuff.
Yeah. You could just not do any of it. I think
congratulations.
Yeah. Because guess what, too?
You're a fighter pilot. You've accomplished a lot.
I have to imagine these fighter pilots are pretty accurate with what they fire at, but God forbid something happens and you jerk the stick a little bit and maybe that round doesn't go where it's supposed to and you kill someone all for a freaking hazing ritual. Yikes. Wouldn't want that on my conscience.
The force that these munitions are shot with, you never know what's going to happen. I was mowing my grass and ran over a fucking rock. And I thought I damn near shattered my window in my house because it clicked up. You're telling me that can't happen with a munition? Like that a munition can't hit a fucking hillside in a rock and have a ricochet come? Next thing you know, a fucking rock goes through this dude's brain and you're like, oh, well, we were just goofing.
Sorry.
You're still going to the brain for the rest of your life, even for a little casual goofing with a fighter jet.
Mm. Yeah, so probably not the best idea, France. Get it together. Yes.
What else is not the best idea is what happened for round number two. This one comes to us courtesy of a little bit of social media. This one, I love it, and I know it's going to be a good story. If I haven't been on Twitter for a little while, and there's like 7, 8, 10 ads of the same handle and then just my at underneath it, where it's just Uncle Chaps, where it's like, you need to check this shit out. You're going to like this. This dude went ballistic. I'm going to tell you a little bit what happened, and then we're going to listen to the audio. So a statement from one of the people that was there, his name is Noel Cook. He says, myself and 5 other military friends were at Lotto Lounge, where this drunk bartender, whose name is Josh Whitcamp, started to destroy someone's military ID because he, quote, used to be a cop and knows what an ID is supposed to look like, and bends her card and throws it in the trash, refusing to let us retrieve it and just leave. So he tells us to call the cops. If you can see, the blonde bartender is urging us to call the cops and also calls the cops. I appreciate her efforts since she realizes that he is getting out of hand. I've never been more heated about a non-racial interaction with someone than the straight disrespect he had for fellow service members, especially when some of us, if not all, joined the military because of 9/11 and how it shaped our upbringing. I hope you see this, Josh Whitcamp, and know your actions that night will define you as a person. Actions always speak louder than words. Let's hear what Noel was talking about. Here's the interaction that he had with the troops just outside of Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
It's a real ID.
I don't understand.
Are you sure about that?
Dude, it's all real.
Okay.
Let me call my boys that have been to fucking Afghanistan.
We've been to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Dude, you don't even look old enough to know about fucking 9/11.
You're so right.
Get the fuck out of my home. Get the fuck out of my home.
He needs his ID.
Well, yeah, you are. This one's fake.
What are you doing, man?
That's fake. Get the fuck out of here. No, you can't. It's a fake ID.
That's government property.
It's going in the trash. Well, if it's government property, then call him in here, and we'll find out if it's government property.
What's
it called? We'll find out.
I don't even know.
What's that?
I know y'all get military in this time.
Yeah, we do, but you can't scrape the front off of a fucking military ID.
Yes, you can. It's laminate, man.
Military IDs are real IDs. Whoa. They're UV protected. They're not laminated. Well, let me see yours.
I will.
So, you think you're going to let me see
it. I'm not going to peel it.
So, because yours is fake too? No. So you're telling me you can scrape the front off a military ID?
Just hold it.
Okay, cool. That'd be fun. Make sure you tell them to send someone up here that has a military ID.
Hey, let's come in our uniforms tomorrow and have a good old time about it.
Oh, yeah. I can buy those at the fucking store up in Jeff's.
If you're wrong, what do you know about it?
Yeah.
I'm still kicking you out of my bar. It doesn't matter.
That's not, what do you do about her ID?
It's destruction of government property, so yeah.
And you can press charges against me if you want. That's fine. I'll give you my ID. That's real. Okay. And I'll tell you exactly what my name is when the cop shows up.
Did you say what his name was, too?
Yeah. Wow. And so what's that going to cost me? $30 to replace your military ID.
And I'm also feeling like...
Hey, look up how much it costs to check
somebody who hasn't even served my country for doing shit? You can do a lot more push-ups than me, and that's great. That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. You can do a lot more push-ups than me. What have you done for this country since World War II? Nobody. Pay my fucking taxes. Work my fucking dick off every fucking day. And also, don't serve minors in my bar. Get the fuck out.
Do I look like a minor?
You do. You do. That's great. Get the fuck out. You're right.
I'm telling you.
You said, show me a credit card. You said you could peel these off too. Wait, what can you peel off? You want to peel something off of that? Here, peel something off of that. See if you peel something off of that. That's my Social Security card. Here's, I'll give you my fucking library card. Peel something off of that. You're telling me that my Missouri ID card is more secure than a fucking military ID?
It's not secure
because
there's no shipping.
Don't worry. What
do you mean it's not secure because there's no shipping?
That's not even a comment.
Yeah. What do you mean there's no secure because there's not shipping? Like you're telling me that I...
Are they here?
Yeah, I can
fucking... I can't peel the front off of this.
Okay. Come, dude, over here.
That's fine. Bring him in here.
Yeah.
Let me see your military ID right here. Yours right here.
Bro, you ready?
Let the cops...
Show.
Okay. I ain't touching them. Let the cops come in here and let them touch them. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I want you both checked by the cops before you guys leave here.
Easy.
Beautiful.
And even when they prove it, he won't say sorry because he's not angry about it.
No, I won't. I'll still tell you guys, get the fuck out of my bar.
Yeah, I don't want to be in the bar. I'm not worried about that.
So why are we even here?
We still need the car.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'll take care of hers.
That's what I'm saying. I'm answering the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
No, I'm fine.
You know, please.
I love you too.
Okay.
Dude, we've had two giant groups of fucking miners come in there the last two fucking weeks. I ain't putting up with this shit.
It's fucking frat boys. They still are ruining my day.
I ain't putting up with this shit.
I hate frat boys. It's just another reason to hate frat boys. How's it going, sir?
How's it going?
Buddy. Hey. Where's this ID?
It's in the trash.
Right there.
What?
Are you working here?
Oh, I am. Have you been in the military, sir?
Yes.
Can you tell me if you can peel off the front of a military ID?
Yeah, actually, I remember mine being laminated, so...
Has she shown you her actual ID where the birth date is raised at the bottom right corner? Her birth date is raised in the bottom right corner?
He's got her.
He's got ID, so...
All right, appreciate it, man.
Thanks a lot.
You know, for an old military adage, I think this is... one of those examples of good initiative, bad judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like where this dude thinks that he is the end all be all authority on what constitutes a military ID. Buddy, military IDs fucking suck.
They're terrible.
like trying to get your cat card reader to read it in your computer, like if you've gotten wet or anything like that, they're awful. Like to so to just assume that just because part of it can scratch off, the entire thing can scratch off. Like yeah, it's so terrible.
Nick, the way it works is you go to the wherever the IDs are given out and they take a blank white card. It's just blank and they put it in this machine and then it gets laminated on both sides. And the one side has like a barcode, your date of birth, your social, the front
and a little
part.
Chip for your yeah. like that it reads like where your email and all that shit comes from.
Yeah. And then, yeah, the other side has like your picture, your rank. Your,
I guarantee Fordham University has better cards.
Probably. Yeah. There's probably a lot of places that have better cards, but what it is, as after a little wear and tear, you could very easily just peel it off the car if you wanted to. And
shit,
people don't
I thought
do
I
it.
I had mine in my pocket. Like it looks like a piece of shit. It looks yes. like a library card. Like there's nothing special about these cards at all. Well, this dude goes fucking ballistic about it. And my favorite part is the cop that comes in. Like after all this shit goes on, this has been going on for like 10 minutes or whatever. The cop comes in and like, does this? And the bartender's like, does this look like an ID card to you? And he asked the cop, like, did you serve in the military? After he asked all of these five or six people, did they serve in the military? And they're all like, yes. The cop comes in and said, did you serve in the military? Even though the other people presented IDs, the cop says yes. And he automatically believes them. He doesn't have to like check their IDs at all. These folks that are in the video look like military members to a T.
Yeah, they all got
the
crappy haircuts.
All have high and tights. Like they all have boot ass haircuts where they look like they just joined. And next thing you know, the cop just says, oh yeah, that's a military ID for sure.
Yeah.
Like it looks just like it's fucked up. Like mine did the same exact thing. And then the bartender has no idea what to say. And then those service members get up and leave. And they do huge credit to them to
yes,
be
they kept their bearing. They kept their bearing very well
in a bar, probably intoxicated at least a little bit. And then they don't say shit back. They don't act like dicks at all mm-hmm. in the video. I was very proud of these junior troops. And in fact, if you have one of these troops, I think they should get like a meritorious mass, a letter of accommodation, something like that. Because when somebody comes at you, one questions your integrity, because that's what it is. And if there's anything that military members are super prideful about across the board, integrity.
Mm-hmm.
I know it stings you when I say you're an integrity violator about what happened with the anchors away. It stings. Like being an integrity violator sucks. Mm-hmm. And them just all being like, well, let's call the cops. Fuck it. Let's just do it. Let's figure this out. I had a lot of respect for them and I think they did the right thing. And I hope the one dude that's like 6'1", I think it's actually Noel. I hope he will fight in Rough and Rowdy and beat the shit out of this.
I will say, I was cracking up your blog, the one line where you know, because he starts saying like, oh, my friends serve. The bartender was saying, oh, my friends
serve. Yeah, Valor adjacent. Big time
yeah,
Valor adjacent.
So I know what an ID looks like. But you're in your blog, you're like, how's about I call my friend Ricky, who was in the Battle of the Bulge there in Vietnam, and I ask him if these are real IDs. That had me rolling, dude. But you know what? The only thing I can think of is this dude was old enough that his buddies, when they served, before we had the cat cards, did you have one of those green IDs?
That's what the retired ID is.
Okay, right. Yes.
That's what I have now.
Right. So those are made a little bit better for whatever reason, because I guess
well, mine's blue. Green was active.
Blue,
duty.
Green. But you yeah. know which ones I'm talking about. And those mm-hmm. are a little more sturdy. So my guess is he had buddies who had those IDs, and that's what he knows. And he doesn't realize because he hasn't been around his buddies because they all left the military. The new cat cards are for shit, for lack of a better word.
And then when you just go out and be like, oh, I'm going to call my friends. They went to Afghanistan. Dude, like half of America went to
Afghanistan. Yeah, seriously. That's not really a qualifier
it's
anymore.
Been like 20 years. Yeah. Like you're not stunting on somebody, but like all of them were like, oh, dude, we've been there too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Right.
Basically, if you've been in the military in the last 2 decades, you've been to Iraq or Afghanistan. If you haven't, I'd like to hear your story because that'd
well,
be interesting.
I don't want to non-deployment shame because we are big believers on you don't control your orders go.
No, I agree with you there, but I just think everyone through the just sheer fact of how long we've been there, I think more or less just about everybody has been over there in
I agree with
some
that.
Shape or form.
Different though, what people haven't done is fucked with a whole shit ton of bees. We're going to talk about that in round number three, because these bees, man, some of these stories that I'm coming across with because I had mentioned it on social media that this is something that I wanted to do. I wanted to talk a lot about the bees and like keeping bees, because one reason why is because the Department of Defense or the Department of Veteran Affairs has come out and said that it's a great way to get around like PTSD, like is finding a hobby or finding something that interests you that you can engross yourself in that still has a little bit of danger and things like that. They're really into beekeeping. They push it all the time. Probably about once every 2 or 3 weeks, there'll be a link inside the VA's emails that they send out to everybody that will have that. You guys should really check those out. I don't know if you can get your GI Bill for being a bee fucker, but it might be something to work. And if you do get extra money to be a bee fucker, you might want to have some good boots while you do that. That's why we're going to recommend Rocky Boots. Rocky Boots are built for the men and women that serve this country, designed and built for the U.S. and each individual branch of the military. Most recently, Rocky Boots, side by side with the United States Marine Corps, has been developing a boot for Marines. It's the Rocky Boot Tropic Boot. Is BRI compliant and made right here in the USA. The boots are flash and water resistant, but they not just have military boots. They have boots for people that like construction, people that are just mowing their lawn, people that are doing stuff in their backyard, people that don't want to break their little baby toes whenever they drop something on there. I love their boots and their shoes. The shoes don't even look like they're construction shoes, but they still have the steel toe. They've saved me a couple times. I like have dropped heavy shit on my toe and I've been wearing this. One of them was this huge chimney that's for like lighting charcoal and shit. It fell off my picnic table, fell straight on my foot. I know for a fact, if I wasn't wearing these shoes, it would have crushed my little big toe and I'd have been limping around like a little bitch on the quarterdeck. I don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. So go to rockyboots.com, enter the promo code ZBT at checkout for 25% off your next pair of boots. Let's get going. Here's Elisha. She is a beekeeper from Florida. And she is making some great bees. She's saving people. One, cons. I don't know your fiance that well, but I know her well enough that if your place in Newark got inundated with bees in the ceiling, you would be a dead man.
Oh, absolutely.
She would automatically blame you.
Yeah, no, I mean... I don't know that there's anything that I don't get blamed for.
Yeah. So if you have, like, if she came home from work and she opened it up and she heard buzzing and she opened up like the attic or something like that, and there's bees everywhere, you would be so fucked.
Mm-hmm. I might, me you too. Know what?
I might. And I'm pointing those fingers at myself too. And Annalise would kill me.
Yeah. I think I would
you should have known this when we bought this house. There's going to be a fucking beehive.
How'd you not know?
Which is very unfair. All right, here's Elisha. She's the beekeeper. We're going to listen to that. Now, Zero Block 30, I am privileged to have Elisha. She is a honey connoisseur. She is a beekeeper, and she is flat out brave. So I'll just be honest how I came across her page. One night, I was enjoying some 3-Chi, which is a marijuana product, and I was sitting and looking through Instagram, and your page, one of your stories popped up, and you had stuck your hand inside a hive, and it blew my mind when you did it, because you don't do it with any gloves on. You just go out there and do it. First of all, how did you get to the point where you're like, you know what? I don't need a bee suit. I'm just going to do this without a bee suit.
Right. Well, I've never wanted a bee suit. I don't like the restrictions. I don't like the way it feels, the leather gloves feel. It's so restricting. I can't feel what I'm doing. I lose all dexterity, and it's so hot, right? I mean, I'm in Florida, Central Florida. It's 95 degrees, and it's like I'm in an oven. So putting that heavy bee suit on just makes it so much worse. And there's times where I can kind of read the bee's temperament, and you kind of get an idea like, oh, I think they're not going to try and kill me. So let's take this.
What does that mean? Like, you read their temperament. Cause like a dog, you see a dog with their, cause I'm a dog handler by trade. That's what I did in the Marine Corps. You look at a dog, you could see their tail. You can read if they're angry, if they're happy, if they're fearful, if they're scared. Is being around bees that long, you can kind of look at the hives and identify what like behavioral traits they're showing. Like, oh, now's not a time for me to go and stick my hand in there.
Yeah, exactly. I usually have to mess with them a little bit first. So usually when I start any kind of removal or going into the hives, I do start veiled, and maybe sometimes I'll wear some nitrile gloves just in case I've come across killer bees. And they would kill you by the thousands. They cover you, but that's rare. It's not as common as you think. But yeah, it's just the same idea. You can kind of just see they're just not buzzing in your face. They're kind of more calm and just flying around. They seem more confused.
They're just like them. Fluttering.
Yes.
Yeah. So explain to the people that might not have seen your Instagram page what it means when you go into a house, because you don't just do it on like a wide open farm. You'll bust out circular saws, and which going into a beehive with a circular saw does not seem like the most calm method to do it. So explain kind of what that process, what it's like to get a phone call, and then how you kind of go through your day-to-day business.
Sure. So I've done all kinds of removals, homeowners, trees. I recently did one for a major resort here in town. It's called the Don Cesar. It's right on the beach. And it was right over their boardwalk. I got the call. They had bees. They wanted to rescue them. And so it was in a seawall. And I had to do this as low key as possible because they didn't want any of their guests to get stung. And I went and, you know, I'm cutting open walls, and sometimes I have to bring power tools, hammers, sledgehammers. I mean, you name it, I've used it to get open walls or structures.
So in some of these videos that you've posted, it'll look like some of these hives have been there for years, like where you've pulled out foot thick honeycombs in somebody's house, like right by their wall.
Yes.
And because you post these pretty regularly, it makes me believe that this is a lot more common than people talk about.
I think people don't realize that there are bees living in their soffit or their wall. They don't walk around to that side of their house. Maybe they don't go outside very much. They just go to their car and back to their house. They have a lawn service. I don't know. I like to be outside all the time, so I would notice, but a lot of people also, it's a financial thing. I think for some people, bee removal can become quite pricey. Mm. So I think they can't afford to pay for it. So they'd often till they absolutely have to. I did a removal once in a trailer, and there must have been 150 pounds of honey. Stu, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. 150 pounds of honey. Can you take that and then, are you able to sell that honey? Because that's valuable.
Yes. So actually, no, by law, I'm not allowed to resell the honey. I always give it to the homeowner. And it was funny. I kept knocking on their trailer, and I kept saying, I need another bucket. I need another bucket. I mean, I gave them almost 4 buckets of honey. Each 5-gallon bucket is 60 pounds. So potentially, I mean, they could make a couple of $1,000 off of the honey if they wanted to resell it.
That's amazing. And before we started recording, you were talking about how the process of making honey is like, people just think you just have some hives, but the way that you go about it, it is art, really, because you're combining different flavor profiles from different plants. Can you talk about what you look for in certain plants to make a certain type of honey?
I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit.
Okay, so you take bees, and like you mentioned before we started recording that you'll go to an area like Jacksonville that has a specific type of plant. Can you talk about that and how the different plants affect the flavor of the honey that you're providing?
Yeah, absolutely. So over the years, I've become, I guess, what you would call a honey chaser. Our city honey, which I sell a lot of, makes, you know, it's a mix. It's going to be all different kinds of flowers from people's yards, trees, bushes. But really, the best honey is going to be agriculture or in the forest of Jacksonville or in the mountains of North Carolina for sourwood. And there's one of our favorites here in Florida is orange blossom. Mm-hmm. So every year in February, I drive my bees to the center of Florida and drop them off in a huge orange grove, and it makes one of the best, lightest, it tastes just like, I don't know if you've ever smelled an orange blossom before.
Oh yeah.
It tastes just like that. It's light, sweet, kind of floral, has a little bit of an orangey zest.
That sounds amazing. I need to get some. I'll order some from your shop whenever you go live with that. The reason why, so our, this is normally a military show and our listeners might be like, what the hell does this have to do with the military? And I think that it's interesting because courage a lot of times is just put in like first responders and people that are working in that, but you have to really adapt and overcome some fears. And I wanted to talk to you about how you did that, because I imagine there's some baby steps along the way, but when you see a dangerous spot or what bees that might be angry, how do you calm yourself? Did you hear me? Did it go out again?
I lost you again.
Okay. So I'll ask.
You went out again.
I'll start that question over. So the reason why I wanted to bring you on the show, this is normally a military show, and we constantly talk to people about courage in the through the lens of the military or first responders, but that's not where courage ends. Like, it goes into all types of different jobs, including yours. So when you go into a place where you have bees that are swarming or bees that are angry or bees that are like, she just took a Diablo circular saw blade to my hive, I'm pretty pissed off about this. How do you, in that moment, when people in their homes are relying on you, how do you calm your nerves before you go and do this?
That's a great point, because every removal, even if I'm just going into my apiary, you have to be calm. You cannot get excited or you're going to get in trouble. I don't know. I just get into the moment, start breathing slow. Just keep thinking about being in this moment right now, taking it slow, listening to the buzzing. I love it. I think that's why I do it, because I get such a rush of becoming present, like here, now, in this moment. Stay calm, collective, focus.
Yeah, because you can't be worried about what's going on in your social media channels or anything like that when there's thousands of bees surrounding you. And I would have thought that you just listened to the music that's on your Instagram page, because it's like very almost like French Meadow is what I would describe it as, because people always are surprised when I tell them when I was a dog handler, I would look for bombs and IEDs and things like that. And I would constantly have on Sinatra's Greatest Hits. I was listening to the headset of like people that could see and have like Overwatch, and in the other ear I would have on Sinatra just to calm myself, because if I was in my own head, I'd be like, shit, this is really scary. So I needed to listen to something to calm me down a little bit. But the bees almost is like a noise machine at night for you, right? Okay, we can pick up there. So the last thing I said was the bees for you is almost like a sound machine where you don't need the music. They provide that almost soothing noise for you to calm you down.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Constantly. Yeah. It's very relaxing to me.
And has it,
but it wasn't always.
Yeah. Talk about that. How it's like, cause this is a job where, like the military, you have recruiters. Like, you have somebody that calls you and like, hey, dumbass, we would like you to come and be a part of us. You look like you're in decent shape. You're this, that. The bee, there's no bee recruiters. So that doesn't happen. How do you fall into doing what you're doing?
Yeah, you just, I don't know. You just sparks an interest. I've always loved nature. We have an edible landscaping. We have chickens, ducks. I love producing food for our family. So I thought, I'm one with nature. I'm going to get some bees. A lot of people tend to make this mistake when they get bees. They think, you know, they have a special connection. And then they'll get around their hives and they'll get their butts kicked.
Yeah.
I only had bees about a week and I took about 6 or 7 bee stings in the face. And that's when I realized, I don't know what I'm doing. What have I done? This is really a dangerous hobby. And then that's when everything had to change. I had to become educated with the bees. I had to figure out, learn their patterns, learn their temperament, know when I can go around the hive. It took years of learning that behavior.
And was it an apprenticeship where you like went to a more experienced beekeeper to like, hey, kind of teach me what's going on here? Or did you just hop on YouTube and try to figure it out that way?
I did everything. I had a mentor. I did local classes. I had books. I had YouTube. And really my best learning tool was my own experience. Every time I went out, I learned something new, trial and error, over and over again.
And I don't know if you've seen this or not, but the Department of Veteran Affairs has put out beekeeping is a great way for veterans who are struggling with PTSD to kind of focus their energies on something else. But I would imagine, I don't know if I believe that, because if you're feeling stressed, you believe that?
Yes. Oh, I think it gets to that point. I think just like with any new hobby, there's a learning curve, right? So you just have to get over the hump. And I mean, now when I want to connect, when I want to relax, get into the moment, that's where I go. I go into the bees. It grounds me. It's soothing. I'm happier that day. I definitely would recommend it. It's just the learning curve. It is challenging in the beginning.
Yeah, because I mean, most people, you get stung in the face 6-7 times from the first week. You're like, this is not for me. I got shot once and I was like, I got to get out of the Marine Corps. This is not for me.
Just be smart. Just be smart. Just wear a veil until you really can understand what to expect.
Very good.
They're going to sting you. It doesn't matter how one you feel like you are or you think that they know you. There's just days they're gonna sting you.
It's wild to just keep going back and back. If people wanted to check you out on social media, where could they find you at? There we go. You're back. I think you're muted now. There we go. All right. So I just have one more question. If people wanted to find your work and to kind of see what you're doing, where would they follow you at on social, your website and things like that?
Yeah. So you can find my name. My company name is How's Your Day, Honey? And I'm on Instagram.
You look so happy when you said that. You love the name. It's so good.
I do. I'm proud of the name. Yeah. I'm new to TikTok. I just started TikTok. I'm learning that.
You're going to blow up on TikTok. Your kind of content is perfect for TikTok.
Yeah, I just started that about a month ago, 2 months ago. And really, Instagram is my main page. I do a lot of daily stories. Anytime I do a bee removal, I record it. I have a bigger following on there. And then I do have a website. Our shop will be up shortly. I honestly don't know if I open up my shop, I can fulfill all these honey orders. I get a lot of people online asking for them. And right now I just sell locally to stores.
Okay. Well, we'll keep a lookout and I'll post a link to where you can follow her at as well. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Be careful out there. It's fascinating. Like even when I got done talking to her, I went and looked all through her social media again, just to stick your bare ass hand in with a colony of bees.
Mm.
And you must have, because the part that really threw me off is at the beginning when she was like, you have to observe the behavior of the bee.
Ha. I'm sorry, what? They fly around.
Because I made the point, like I can, like a dog, you look at their tail, you look at their hair, like how it stands up. A bee's tiny, man, and there's thousands of them. How do you observe their behavior? Like the amount of time that it would take to do that and learn that. I mean, that's why she said she got stuck in the face a bunch of times.
Yeah, I guess do they just fly like, oh, there's Frank. Frank's angry on Tuesdays. Let's let him do his thing.
And some of them, she'll go into the videos and she'll identify the queen, and she'll just go in with her hands, pluck out the queen, carry it, put it in this little box, and then all of the rest of them, all these bees, the worker bees, they call worker bees, they should be called cuck bees. Like, they, anywhere these queens go, they're just like following. They're just trying to get some of that sweet honey cooch. That's all they want. I don't even know if they fuck the queen bee.
They probably don't. They probably don't.
So are all the work, I wonder. Ah, fuck. See, I hate when we do this because then I have a question I wish I had asked. Is there only one? Is every female a queen?
I'm gonna say no. I don't know that.
So
I
just some of the worker bees are like lesbian bees.
I don't know if it's so much about their sexuality as it is about, I don't know what I'm talking about right now. I'm just going to stop. I have no idea the answer to this. I think there's just one bee and it grows up to be the biggest. So they're like, oh, that's the queen now.
Oh, not all are queens.
See,
not all females are queens.
Not all are queens. Has something to do with how fertile they are.
I want to officially stop calling them queen bees. And the queen bee should be known as Beyonce.
Okay.
Like, one that's in charge.
Yeah.
Because they're not all.
And then when the other bees, they show up, they just walk, they walk in, they buzz and they say, yes, queen.
Mm-hmm. And you have Beyonce. And then like second in command could be like Kelly Rowland.
Oh man. No. But gosh, how annoyed must they be? The rest of Destiny's Child to see Beyonce and her glow up, marrying Jay-Z, becoming the queen.
Yeah, because I don't even remember the other woman's name. You got
Beyonce, don't remember the third.
Kelly Rowland, and who is the other one?
Your guess is as good as mine. I don't recall.
Nick Lachey.
Kelly Rowland had some good tracks with Nelly, if I recall correctly.
Oh yeah, she did. Those are fucking slappers, and she's still a good singer. She's still out there doing it.
Right, exactly. But so, like, they were all really good
too. We'd be remiss if we didn't give a shout out to Solange.
They were all good. So why was it Beyonce? Why did she elevate herself?
I think she had no choice. I mean, I think it's kind of like Justin Timberlake. He had to leave NSYNC, obviously. Like, JC Sanchez, like, you have all these other folks that were doing great things. Lance Bass, like, they were doing not the chubby fella who looks like he should work at Barstool. But the other three, they were doing pretty good things too.
Mm-hmm. And then one of them just distinguishes themselves among the rest, I guess.
You know who was a heartthrob who was never should have been a heartthrob? Nick Carter. There's nothing special about Nick Carter.
No, I feel like
the other guy, Brian, was way hotter. Did you know Brian wanted to be a pastor too?
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
Is there some Facebook group you guys are all a part of? Former
almost no, but pastors? Back in the day, if anybody had religious ties in, I knew that like right from the jump. That's why I was a huge POD fan before POD really even took off. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to round number four. This one comes to us from our guy Jim Laporta, who is a Marine who also works for the Associated Press, and he does all kinds of stuff for NBC on your show, the This Is Us. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. He consults. Yes.
Yeah, I love it when they have actual veterans who have done actual shit, doing actual consulting for things like that.
Mm-hmm.
NBC does that. So this, I had never seen this before. Mm-mm. And I want to kind of set the stage here why I think this is important, because you have some of the major journalists at the time. If you extrapolate this and take it to modern times, this would be essentially like your Brit Humes, whoever the fuck the Fox and Friends host are, and the Anderson Cooper and others sitting down with active duty folks talking about philosophies of war and philosophies of covering the war. And I think it's incredibly important, because I know for a fact, Fallujah, if there is no journalist at the time, and we knew that there was no journalist at the time, the way that you act and you can conduct missions under the law of war and under the rules of engagement are drastically different than if you have journalists in the room, because you know things can be construed only from one perspective. Like, and if you don't have the perspective of what war actually entails, then as a journalist, I think sometimes you can miss the boat. Now, that doesn't excuse war crimes or shit like that. And I don't know if you've seen, did you see what happened with Eddie Gallagher the last week?
I saw something pop up, but I didn't see the details. I didn't look into it. I just saw the headlines.
There's this podcast called The Line. I think it's called The Line. And Eddie Gallagher went on there and he was talking about how they knew that they were going to kill the guy. Like the guy that Eddie Gallagher was tried for a war crime and was eventually acquitted. He was like, we knew that we were going to kill him. People who have listened to this and support this line of thinking are so completely devoid of morals that I don't understand how we served the same country. Like it got to that point where you can look at something and Eddie Gallagher openly admits on the podcast, yes, we did. We stabbed him in a couple of different areas in order to practice our medicine, like in how we would heal people. And the only thing I could think of whenever he was saying it is that, and this is a line that's used, I think, entirely too much, but it's fitting here. That's exactly what the Nazis did. It is exactly what the Nazis did, where the Nazis would rip the teeth out of Jewish people in order to try to find out all kinds of different perspectives on medicine and shit like that. If you're saying that you conducted, he stabbed somebody in the neck to learn how to heal the airway in order to see if he could stop it. To me, that is it's as sadistic as it gets. I have no problem in a war context, military age males fighting combatants, killing somebody, none. And that's not something that I'll ever apologize for or say that it's wrong. You want to go up to Osama bin Laden and you want to shoot him in the face with a fucking 50 caliber weapon, straight point blank range. I have zero issue with that because he's dead after. However, we live by the Geneva Conventions. We are not savages. We are not people who go out and try to abide outside of the rule of law. So to say that I stabbed somebody or I had somebody else cut somebody else's airway open so that I could train, I understand this is a member of ISIS or a member of Al-Qaeda or whoever it was. There is a level of human decency that we are responsible for. And falling short of that and saying that everybody was on board, if everybody is on board with that, I'm completely off board with everything that you're doing and everything that you stand for. But that is not who I am. That is not the military I served in. And it's not the military that I represent.
Yeah, I think the line for people gets hazy because they're like, oh, well, these people are doing terrible things to U.S. soldiers and U.S. sailors. And so often I was very fortunate that because of the track of studies I did when I was in school, I did a lot of deep dives on the law of war. And I think we should do more of it across the board for all of our military because it is not always.
Think tanks are as important for privates as it is for a general.
Yeah.
It just is. Philosophy is important.
Yeah. And I think the one of the hardest things to come to grips with is when we would talk about why do we have to follow the Geneva Conventions and uphold the laws of war when the people that we're fighting against ignore it completely, probably don't know it exists at all, and have no regard for human decency at all. And the fact is that we have to uphold that standard beyond reproach. And it's not up to people to decide whether or not it's okay because the person that you have did something to you. Once they're captured and they're no longer able to defend themselves, they become a non-combatant. And if you're torturing a non-combatant, you're breaking the laws.
You are no better than what you're fighting.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like you really, there is a certain level of, there is a modicum of decency that is required to be somebody that wields such great responsibility. Mm-hmm. And for somebody like Eddie Gallagher, who was the chief enlisted advisor for SEAL Team 7, whenever you're in that position with great power comes great responsibility. It's cliche as fuck, but it is absolutely true. And of course, everybody is on board. Of course they are, because you are the senior enlisted advisor. And we talked about it at the beginning of the show where like how I will denigrate officers sometimes, usually joking. Mm-hmm. The viewpoint and the veracity in which the senior enlisted advisor speaks is the way that the command flows. And I believe that wholeheartedly. There is some things that an officer and a battalion level commander can do to skew what the chief enlisted advisor will do. But typically the chief enlisted advisor will have more time in service and have a little bit more clout with 95% of the people that are in the organization. Mm-hmm. So when the chief enlisted advisor for SEAL Team 7 says, this is okay, it makes it okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's not okay.
Yes. And it goes back to what I was saying. Like the vast majority, I'm, unless I'm mistaken now, but I think the vast majority of our military, maybe they get like one briefing on it, but they don't go into any sort of depth on
the law of war,
the law of war, and the Geneva Conventions, and why we do any of that. And they don't understand. And I think the American public just generally skews it as I said, well, these are terrible people doing terrible things. So you could do whatever you want to that. It's like, well, no. A long time ago, we came to the decision that we're not going to be barbarians like that. Yes, mm-hmm. in the throes of battle, things will happen. But then there comes a time when you have to exhibit control and you have to have that moral compass. And it has to be right and trained such that you don't devolve into what you're fighting against, as you aptly put.
And I will say it is an incredibly difficult concept to put in place in an actual practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea that the idea that the person who shot me when I shot back, if he would have lived, I would have had to go out and do everything that I possibly could to keep him alive.
Right.
Like that is the antithesis of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. But you have to get past the nature of the human and do what's right and like really evolve to the place where you are the embodiment of the values that you want to express to the rest of the world, which is a weird concept whenever you're talking about carrying huge weapons and shooting them at people.
Yeah. But that's why too, you have such a greater responsibility as a senior enlisted person, as an officer, mm-hmm. because you know that your junior enlisted, your junior officers are not going to have the same level of experience and the same level of training. So you have to impart that example upon them. So
and
that they know
the military is going against your instincts, right?
Yes.
Like your instincts, naturally you have fight, flight, or flee. Like those are your natural instincts. Most people don't have the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to move past it. And it is, I even use it at the top of the show when describing the rounds, that courage is not the absence of fear, but moving forward despite fear. I think that is the most true statement that I've ever learned about the military. And I think that it constantly presents itself in a way that is challenging. And that's why I have so much respect for this roundtable that we're about to listen to. This is people that are senior members of journalists. This is people that are going to go on to be the main reporters on shows like 60 Minutes. These are people that are majors. These are people that are major generals. These are people that are four-star generals. They're talking about what they would do in a situation like My Lai. And if you haven't listened, if you don't know My Lai, you need to go read about it because it is an atrocity amongst atrocities. It's possibly one of the worst things that America's done, which that list is long as well. So like the things that they talk about in this roundtable are incredibly poignant and they really present themselves. And it's almost going to be like the West Wing, where we talk about whenever Cons and I really like the West Wing, it's because the topics that they talk about are timeless. The topics in this roundtable are timeless. You can change the location of the battle, the time period of the war, the war it's at, and you can extrapolate that to any time period in American history, including now. And I hope that people can have an intelligent conversation like these men do here. Give it a listen.
You were in. I mean, I live in fear, of course, of coming upon an American unit, as well as a South Khoisanese one. But
if you made the decision, you would film the North Khoisanese shooting the American soldiers.
Well, I guess I wouldn't. I mean, I'm going to tell you now what I'm feeling rather than the hypothesis I drew for myself. If I was with a North Khoisanese unit that came upon Americans, I think I personally would do what I could to warn the Americans.
Even if it means not getting the live coverage?
Well, it would mean my life, and I don't have much doubt about that, I think. And I'm very glad this is a hypothetical, but but I do not... I do not think I could bring myself to participate in that fashion. That's purely personal. Other reporters might have a different reaction.
Mr. Wallace?
I think some other reporters would have a different reaction.
Such as?
They would regard it simply as another story that they are there to cover.
They're going to cover enemy soldiers shooting and killing American soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Could you imagine how they would report that to the American people?
Surely I can.
Could you do it?
Would I do it? I'm an old man. I don't know that I would. I find it very difficult to believe, and I'm astonished, really, to hear Peter say that. You're a reporter. Granted, you're an American, but you're a reporter covering combat between North Khorasan, South Khorasan, and the Ally. And I'm a little bit at a loss to understand why, because you are an American, you would not have covered that story. I mean, when we go back to Vietnam, there were all kinds of reporters who did indeed go in to Hanoi, wanted to go to Haiphong. Everybody wanted to go there. Why would a reporter say, I'm not going to cover that because I am unhappy about what's happening there?
It's not unhappiness, Mr. Wallace. It's, don't you have a higher duty as an American citizen to do all that you can to save the lives of soldiers rather than this journalistic ethic of reporting the fact?
No, you don't have the higher duty to... No. You're a reporter. Your job is to cover what is going on in that war. People know that Americans are getting killed in that war. Lord knows it's a hypothetical. I would I'd get on the horn with Peter and say, what the dickens do you mean?
Yeah, I think he's right too. I chickened out. I mean, yeah. I played the hypothetical very hard, but I think he's right.
I think they've got the same problems that Downs has.
What's the problem, General Scowcroft?
I think the problem is the situation, the job, as opposed to a higher cause. First of all, I think you're Americans first and you're journalists second, just as I think that Downs is, sure, he's a unit commander and he's got these terrible ethical problems, but we do live by rules in this society, rules of right and wrong, even situationally in the broad sense.
General
we
Scowcroft,
can't get away
what in the world
like
is wrong with photographing this attack by North Korea on There's American soldiers?
Simply because, what's it worth? It's worth 30 seconds on the evening news as opposed to saving a platoon, what have you. I mean, what difference does it make on the evening news? You see some Americans get killed.
In other words, what you're saying is that the reporter should say, hey, hold it, fellas, Americans, these guys are about to go after you, and you die. That's really what the question is here.
Yeah.
And your answer is?
I don't know.
You see, and I agree with Mike intellectually, and I really do. I wish at the time I'd made another decision, but it wasn't the one I made at the moment. I would like to have made his decision.
General Westmoreland?
Well, it's rather repugnant to me, and I think it would be repugnant to the American listening public to see on film in the United States an ambush of an American platoon by our national enemy. The conclusion that would be drawn is that the network is in cahoots with the enemy.
General, the question is raised actually in the cities of New York, in the cities of this country, in which you say, if you knew that a murder was going to take place ahead of time, would you cover that story? Or would you let the object of that murder know? Or would you let the police know? I think, and I've answered this question before, I think that I would surely not let the man or the woman be murdered. I would let the authorities know. And then you say, all right, under those circumstances, now move it over into war. And it's like, I'm going back and forth as I sit here. I understand all of the stresses and strains that are going on. It's a hell of a dilemma to be in. I think I don't know what the hell I think.
Janelle, they're
calling me back, Mike. I hope to tell me it wasn't such a stupid decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
The same problems down,
right. Yeah. You're now
that's second tier.
Major Stewart and Colonel Connell, I can see the venomous reaction you're having to hearing this.
I think what we're asking the reporter on the scene to do is keeping in mind that that individual is not a combatant. We expect our combatants to do in the normal course of their duties that which is heroic at all times. We are now all of a sudden charging the reporter with doing the heroic when that is not, maybe for them it's super heroic. To jump up and yell and scream and warn the Americans. I think that that's different, however, than that which we expect of ourselves while in uniform and in a combat situation.
Colonel Connell?
I feel utter contempt. 2 days later, they're both walking off my hilltop, they're 200 yards away, and they get ambushed, and they're lying there wounded, and they're gonna expect I'm gonna send Marines out there to get them. They're just journalists. They're not Americans. Is that a fair reaction? Yeah. Can't have it both ways.
It's a fair reaction.
But I'll do it. And that's what makes me so contemptuous of them. And Marines will die going to get a couple of journalists.
I would really like to, because this we only listened to 10 minutes. This entire conversation is 2 hours. I would really like to do a piece by piece of this.
Yeah.
And see where... we lie, because when they pose the question of if you are a journalist embedded with a foreign fighter and they're going on American troops, what do you do? That question is beyond difficult. Like it really is. You're asking like these, like the Tom Brokaws of the world embedded with foreign fighters, knowing that they're going against American troops. Essentially, are you going to kill yourself? Is essentially what they're asking these reporters. Because mm-hmm. if you warn American troops that the enemy is incoming and you're embedded with the enemy, you are dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, dead. It was Mike Wallace at a few points. He just paused and you could tell he didn't necessarily have an answer.
When people like Mike Wallace
are at a loss for words.
And it's like a 10-second pause. You're like, that is a pause that for me is 2 hours. Because yeah. Mike Wallace, he can process information very quickly. That 10-second pause is incredibly telling about how difficult the subject this really is.
Mm-hmm. And you know what gives me pause about journalists then and journalists now? And I worry that especially journalists now are on the hook so much for ratings that they forget sometimes that they're shaping people's opinions.
Oh yeah, you right? shape the narrative big time.
They are shaping how people view our military, view what we're doing across the world.
And cops.
Police officers. And I feel like that responsibility is lost on some of the journalists in our present day media. And that's unfortunate. I will say, you know, 2 points. When you think about the My Lai massacre, terrible. And that's another incident that I've studied in great detail. And you think about Callie was a second lieutenant. And I can remember being a second lieutenant and facing.
You don't know shit.
You don't know anything, man. And you're put in a situation where you're responsible and you have to make decisions that affect, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40 lives. That is a very tough situation to be in as a young
and
individual.
Luckily now we're at the position in the military where, like, because of schools and training that you're, the odds of a second lieutenant actually being on the battlefield now, it's pretty low.
Yeah, by the time you get there, you're
going to be a first lieutenant.
First usually. Lieutenant, you're going to get some time in service. You know, I think in Vietnam, things were hurried along just to get people out.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you get promoted yeah. right there on the spot.
Right, right.
Which they should bring back too.
Yeah, I don't mind you, that.
I mean, what's the harm in that? Like for somebody like me, like, and I don't want to toot my own horn, but I was pretty competent. Like if you, like in certain situations, if a battalion commander or a brigadier general saw like leadership qualities, a technical and tactical proficiency to be able to do things outside your rank and experience, they absolutely should be able to commission you on the spot. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Maybe not be able to hold a command position where you're like a non-command type of officer, like a chief warrant officer or something like that. But you can even take that where you could be a non-command first lieutenant or captain, even where you can have those responsibilities. There is plenty of people on the enlisted side that don't have a college education, won't ever go get a college education, but are plenty proficient to be an officer. Plenty.
Yeah, I'm not sure when the battlefield commission ceased to be a thing. But yeah, I would probably be in favor of that. But it can't just be something that's on a whim. You'd have to have significant evidence, I think.
You can't give away like a letter of appreciation. You have to yeah. have, like, pretty special to do
right.
it. But it's just
right.
like battlefield promotions in general. Like, they don't do it enough. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if I've said this on the show, but whenever I was in Iraq, like, and I was a corporal at the time whenever I did everything. And I had won the meritorious sergeant board. Like, we had boards in combat zones where I had already had, before I got shot, I had an award pending for valor and for bravery and shit like that. I got notified that I had won a combat meritorious promotion. In the Marine Corps, when you get not just meritoriously promoted, but when you get a combat meritorious promotion to a rank that's above E4, like you're talking E5, E6, your career is pretty much set. Unless you fuck up something hugely along the way, you're going to be good. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to be fine. The company or the battalion commander, when I was in the hospital, came to the hospital and told me, we're not going to give you you're no longer going to get the combat meritorious promotion because you got shot, and we think that you're going to be out of the Marine Corps in the next 6 months.
That stinks.
Yeah.
To hear that, certainly. Yeah. I'm interested to hear your thoughts, though, on just that 10-minute clip. And as you said, I'd like to break down the full 2 hours. But I think ultimately, I agreed. I thought I think it was a major, the Marine Corps major, or maybe it was Lieutenant Colonel. I'm not sure. At the end.
Yeah, he's a major.
Major. At the end, I thought his point was very, very poignant when he said, you can't have it both ways, where if you're going to expect us to come help you and defend you and save you, if you get into a bad situation, you can't then on the flip side of that, just not say it like you're a journalist and not an American first. I was in agreement with him. I thought
actually kind of disagree.
Okay.
Like I think the role of the journalist to give an unbiased perspective about what's going on. If you're a columnist. Yeah. If you're a columnist there, I think that the role is very, very different. Like, I think that if you're an opinion writer, like, say, Tucker Carlson or, like, a Jim Acosta, somebody like that who is known for giving opinions, is embedded with the enemy. You know what you're getting into. You, mm-hmm. you know you're not in a military role, and you sign papers leaving on your visa knowing that you're not a military role. I think that that's drastically different. When you're a military member, your role is to protect Americans at all costs. So if you have to go in and you have to conduct a dangerous mission to save somebody like an Anderson Cooper or Jim Acosta or fucking Brett Hume or whoever it may be, that's a risk that you signed on taking.
Mm-hmm.
I completely understand the journalists doing their job. The military member's job, it does not matter to me what your intentions were whenever you're signing up. You're an American. My job is to protect you, period. If you're a journalist, your job is to report the news, period. Would I like it if you gave me a little bit of heads up that I'm about to get ambushed? Sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Is that a requirement? No.
It's not a requirement, but I just think I think sometimes these journalists...
Would my feelings be different if I was still wearing fucking coyote tan every day? Probably.
So, yeah. But I think too often times these journalists, they like to hide behind journalistic integrity, and they think that's a catch-all that allows
and
them
being
to
a journalist
have carte
is not
launch.
The same as being a doctor. The Hippocratic Oath and your journalistic oath is not the same fucking thing.
Right.
Get the fuck
right.
out of here.
And so I think what was interesting about those clips, though, too, is I think you had Mike Wallace, you had Peter Jennings, who normally would stand behind and say, I'm a journalist first and I have to report the story. This is the first time it seemed like, because they were at a loss for words, that they were presented with a scenario like this where, wow, if I do my journalistic duty, that means Americans are going to die. I don't know how I feel about
and the
that.
Ages were very interesting too, because you had a young Peter Jennings that mm-hmm. was there, and you had Mike Wallace, who's an older gentleman who was a reporter during Vietnam and knew some of the things that were happening in Vietnam. So that generational divide is very interesting, where Jennings was like, I'm not sure. And Wallace was like, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Like, whenever personal experience is so much more valuable in that kind of situation than straight up philosophy.
Yeah, they also, they mentioned a very few times how they, oh, thank God this is a hypothetical. Thank God this is a hypothetical. Because
human nature is self-perseverance.
Yes, yes, yes.
Especially by yourself. And it's a lot easier to not have that self-perseverance attitude when you're surrounded by people who are wearing the same uniform.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the midst of the enemy and you're the only American there, oh, buddy, that level of fear is something that most people, luckily, will never know.
Yeah. So I would very much be interested to see a present day situation like this, especially
they won't do it.
They won't do it. No, they definitely won't. They definitely won't. Just because but also I think,
and not necessarily cowards, just the way that social media, everything's going to be. There's plenty of competent people on both sides of the aisle, military, active, veteran, to be able to do this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't do it. And I wish they would, because that's a conversation that current America needs to have, especially during a time where it's like the quote enemy of the people shit. Like, where are we at? What are we doing? What? And it would be very interesting on the backdrop of America's longest war, too. Like,
that's what I was going to say. We're at. I think it would go a long way to help in figuring out what the plan is with Afghanistan. Granted, I know what President Biden has said about Afghanistan and the September 11th.
Yeah, I don't give a shit what anybody says about Afghanistan.
Right. But I'd be interested to hear current day journalists and former military leaders, maybe some current military leaders, have this sort of discussion, this sort of roundtable. But you're right. I don't think anyone would do it for fear of what would happen afterwards, the blowback from it.
No doubt about it. All right, let's move on to a little bit of save rounds and alibis. And that's going to be brought to you by our friends at SA. Fuck me. I lost my ad read.
Oh, no.
Oh, SA Company. Yeah. SA Company is a great company. They actually sent me a bunch of these face masks, and it's not face masks for like coronavirus. It can be used for that too. Like, but that is kind of like fading away. People are getting their vaccines. The VA actually announced today that walk-ins only, any clinic in the United States, you can go in, do a walk-in as long as you're inside the time, which is a great fucking thing. But the SA Company, they have dozens of face shields, because you're still going to need face shields even if you don't do it. Like for me, I used the one that they sent this week. It has an American flag, and I used it in my backyard because I don't know about you, Cons. I'm an allergy guy. And whenever I'm mowing the yard and I have all this dust flying out, I start sneezing and looking like a fucking boot ass bitch. With SA Company, I tie these things around my face. I don't have that, and they don't make you super hot. If you're going to be spending the summer doing anything, hunting, fishing, hiking, skiing, riding bikes, biking, whatever, you're going to need some protection. They have the UV protection as well. It's one size fits all, machine washable. Make sure you go check it out. Go to safishing.com/zero to get 5 face shields for the price of 1, plus a lifetime warranty for free returns if you're not satisfied. Lifetime warranty, free returns. My God, that's fucking dangerous. safishing.com/zero. You're going to love them. They're great. They've donated well over 100,000 face shields to those on the front lines of the pandemic. For every order, SA donates 1 face shield to each first responder, and you're going to get a great deal on a great product. Make sure you go to safishing.com/zero to check that kind of stuff out. You're going to like that. All right, let's move on to save routes, alibis. Cons, what do you got?
A couple things. Number one, I was at a high school baseball game last week, and the opposing team had that digital camo. We need to just abolish digital camo for sports uniforms. Really? I think it looks terrible.
For football uniforms?
Yeah. No, it was a baseball uniform, but any sports uniforms, I think it's just a bad look. So let's get rid of that. Did you see the Twitter thread that had the branches of the military as sandwiches?
No.
Oh, listen to this. Ready?
Okay.
All right. Army. The Army is grilled cheese. Plain and simple, but also a staple as American as the Kraft singles that live between two slices of buttery white bread.
Oh, I disagree. If I was doing the Army, I would say club sandwich, a little bit of everything.
Okay, fair. Navy, ham and cheese. Fine, just fine. A standard, old, reliable sandwich that no one would refuse.
But also, no, see, you
but
can't
also not anyone's favorite.
How does the Navy have more than the fucking Army? That doesn't make any sense.
Listen, I'm just reading the Twitter thread.
They have no ground troops whatsoever. If anything, in this scenario, the Navy should be a fucking grilled cheese. You know what they do? They deal with boats, maybe occasionally a fucking plane, but that's the bread. Like okay. they basically have two beats.
All right. Marines, sloppy Joe, messy and meaty, a real man sandwich. That's it.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah. Air Force, French dip, great, but definitely a little over the top, a classy meat served on very bland bread. Coast Guard, hot dog. Everyone says they're not a sandwich, but they have all the right ingredients. Plus, everybody loves them. And then finally, the Space Force, a bread bowl, like a spaceship, but for soup. Kind of like a sandwich, but actually not at all.
No, yeah, I think those check out. The only one I really have a big disagreement with is the Army. You guys deserve more than a grilled cheese. Right. I mean, I would say if you want to go grilled cheese, I think club sandwich is much more apt, but I would say Monte Cristo.
Ooh, that could be good. I like that. I like that answer. And then finally, something that happened right before we were recording. I was coming back from the gym. No big deal. And I walk in and in my apartment, we have a door to the hallway. And then there's a door, a private entrance, just that goes right outside. And the door was open. So I walk out and I see Alex sitting there talking to a young girl. And it's just like one of our neighbors just apparently walked up, knocked on our door, and it was just like looking to chat. And she was this cute little girl and very friendly and very precocious and chatty. And it was just a very nice thing to see.
No, that you guys are still gonna get murdered by that kid. She's set all right, me up big time.
All right, maybe we'll see.
It's gonna be like posted. That baby on Lemony Snickets.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. That's all I got.
All right, I don't have much. Friday, we will be back. We have some things going on. What?
I gotta hear your thoughts. I know you blogged it, but Tim Tebow.
And I don't think people who aren't Jacksonville fans, the Tebow is like a terrorist, honesty. Like he really is to the Jacksonville community. Like he hovers, like his presence is just constantly hovering around. What? 33 years old, he's never played tight end, and not all of us. He can't catch a fly ball, but he's going to be able to catch a rocket over the middle with a linebacker coming down his throat.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man.
I you know what? I love that Tim Tebow just believes in himself. Doesn't matter what it is Tim or how Tebow, ridiculous it is.
It just loves attention.
Yes. That's what people don't talk about enough. He thrives in this. Remember that time he was with the Jets and he was running in the rain without his shirt on?
He loves it, man.
You don't run without your shirt unless you're trying to show off.
He is the most humbly egotistical maniac in the history of the world.
Yes. And he hides. I'm all right. I hate to say this. I think he hides behind the whole overly religious thing. So people are afraid to call him out on stuff.
And even when he was out with like Pat McAfee and they were playing golf at Top Golf or whatever, and Tebow rips like a 320 yard drive because he's a fucking beast of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat McAfee, who's also a great athlete, is like, Jesus, whenever he hits it. And Tebow instinctually goes, loves you. Get out of my face, Tim Tebow.
Yeah, I mean, he's an exceptional athlete. I mean, arguably the greatest college football player of all time. You could certainly make the case.
You could.
I would like for him to just, I don't hate anything he does per se. I just would love
off
for
the
him
top
to,
of your head, top five college football athletes of all time.
Of all time college. Mm-hmm. Tebow.
Let's do one for one and see if we have a close to the same list. Okay. My number one of all time, Vince Young.
Yeah, you could argue Vince Young. I would go Tebow.
Tebow is your number one seed.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. When you look at the numbers and what he accomplished.
What do you think Cam would do on that same team? He's more athletic, a better thrower of the football.
I don't know. I mean, Cam had one of the
nearly the talent around him.
No, but he had one of the best.
I mean, think of the talent around Tebow at those school at that. During that time, insane.
Yeah, but I mean, the guy is still a competitor.
I think the most impressive college football player to watch and the most must watch week in, week out was Johnny Manziel.
No, he didn't do it for me. I don't know why.
Really?
Maybe because of his attitude that just really rubbed me the wrong way.
The fact that he was small just added so much more to the things that he was doing when he, like, the Saban killer, like, the only player that Saban could not figure out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Gosh, put me on the spot here. I'm trying to think.
Reggie Bush.
Yeah, but yes, but also you could argue Reggie Bush just kind of had like highlight type accolades and didn't really put in the numbers. So I don't know if I'd put him as best.
Reggie Bush, the greatest player of all time, never to be a starter.
Hmm.
People forget that Lindell White was the starter.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Gosh. Good question. It's a good question.
Charles Woodson's my other one.
I mean, you could argue Peyton Manning, I think.
No, I don't think you can. Not at college.
I guess because he never beat Florida.
And never won a national championship, never won a big bowl game.
All right. I don't know. I think it starts and ends with Tebow.
You know who else was unbelievably electric at college football player? And this is because my brain is weird pre-injury. I would say the most exciting players, two of which came from Colorado, Rashawn Salaam and Cordell Stewart.
Yeah, Cordell Stewart. That's a good answer, too. Hmm. Not sure.
All right. Well, that's it. We'll be back on Friday. Sound the retreat.